Okay, good evening, insiders. welcome back tonight to the QS Cast. Joining again this week is Chris Martin, a fellow QS writer. Chris, thank you for giving us your time this week.
No problem. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, awesome. It seems like we've had a pretty good run of casts. Sorry, I'm like kind of trying to eat in the middle of this, but
Three weeks in a row though. It's been fun.
yeah. So there. You know, I didn't have like a very concrete itinerary of what to talk about today, but there were a couple things that I did want to discuss. And then, you know, I'd like to talk about, you know, cars to consider for this week, cars that we're looking at. I know you have, you know, you mentioned last week, you know, you're kind of part two, and that's kind of going through editing and all the proper channels. So that should be up fairly soon. And again, that's in regards to your ensuring your collection.
So my first of two went live this morning. Hopefully everyone got a chance to read it. I appreciate feedback and you know the click and read through. I think if there's nothing else you take away from that article, it's just to make sure that you consider what your collection's value is. The number that I kind of picked after doing some research was $5,000. If you have more than $5,000 worth of trading cards, and I'm using trading cards, not just Magic specifically, because I know we do have some insiders who are actually sports collectors as well, myself included. I used to collect baseball cards, so I have a couple thousand dollars worth of those myself just lying around. And anyway, trading cards as a general rule, Pokemon, Magic, sports cards, Yu-Gi-Oh, the list goes on. They are not covered in the majority of cases with your insurance policy. So what I really encourage everyone to do coming out of part one of the two articles that I'm writing is to make sure you consult with your insurance agent or a licensed insurance professional, and at least at a minimum gauge your risk level, gauge your risk tolerance, and certainly consider picking up collectibles insurance policy for your Magic cards and so on. So
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I really think that aspect is going to be quite helpful. So everyone be on the lookout for that. I'm sure Chris will drop us all a line when that goes live. So the past week, you know, and even last week, we touched on a couple topics, but you know, there were a couple things that kind of popped up. Obviously, you know, always great discussion going on in the Discord. I mean, the amount of value, I mean, on a daily basis, incredible. I feel like that's even an understatement. But
it's pretty amazing how much
yeah, go ahead.
information gets shared here on a day-to-day basis. It's amazing, honestly.
The insider Discord that I wanted to talk about, some changes kind of to my strategy, and inevitably that may change, you know, how I evaluate, and it's going to be a case by case basis, but it may just kind of overall kind of change my stance at least a little bit. You know, Tark and I, you know, over the course of doing this podcast, you know, we really kind of adopted and pushed the you know, very short term turn and burn strategy. It's worked well for us. It's definitely minimized a lot of the risk, at least, you know, as Magic was kind of changing and taking its kind of new shape as I've seen it do up until this point. You know, with just reprints and continued printing of all these supplemental products. And while that I still kind of feel that way, you know, as you know, the Discord got kind of, you know, ramped up, and you know, not this kind of thing that just 20 insiders were in at some point. It's like barely even off the ground, and kind of has grown. And also, just like personally, you know, you know, with having a job, and as many insiders do, you know, you start to, you know, before when I did have more time to kind of put into this and didn't mind kind of some of the, I guess, what I'd like to call as legwork, you know, packaging, going to the post office, waiting, whatever. You know, you do have to put a time, you know, a dollar sign to your time. And you know, while, you know, if you make X amount, it has to be kind of proportionate. I mean, if you make X amount at your job, and you know, it may not ever kind of get to that point where it's like, you know, I make X amount like per hour, why would I like go and do that? And that's certainly okay. this is nice, you know, and always has been for me, like a very, you know, lucrative side kind of thing for me. And mostly it's fun. And I enjoy doing, you know, navigating this kind of aspect of the game. But where I once kind of didn't take into account, you know, I always kind of took into account, but I didn't weigh it as heavily as I did before, mainly just because it's fine and I'm fine to do it. I just don't, you know, I feel like I've now changed to really kind of pick and choose what I go after, what I invest in. Because I found myself really shifting to, you know, sticking to stuff like the Ravnica, you know, the Mythic Edition stuff, you know, that's all fine. But mostly, you know, just buying stuff and not being so quick to like even just turn around and like sell it the next day. You know, I may push, you know, my stances to be like, hey, you know, if you're going to do this, you should probably take this into consideration. Might not be for you. It's not for me. But I just don't have as much time to package stuff like a million different, you know, 10 different packages. That's definitely out the window. You know, waiting in line, you know, sending all this stuff out. So I've really been turning to buy lists. I mean, you know, I just kind of opened up, like, I'm using myself as an example, is like a real life example here, that, you know, I had like a bunch of stuff even I bought, you know, more so probably a month ago. I mean, this is going back when they were even talking about, this is like a few weeks ago, I think, even now, when they were talking about the changes to the London Mulligan rule. And I just had, like, you know, stuff, orders from like weeks ago, just kind of sitting there. And, you know, I package it all up, you know, send it out to a buy list. If I hit on the stuff that I hit on, I lose on the stuff that I lose on. And if I end up, you know, making more, that's fine. If not, then whatever. But I guess the TLDR, you know, I kind of want to be thorough in what I'm talking about, is that you do have, at least for me, you know, and as I've kind of ramped up to full time, even what I do and teaching and all that, is that I just, you know, definitely keep that in mind. And this is more so for insiders, you know, to kind of know, at least in the back of my mind, where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I'll share a couple of thoughts on my perspective of that. I've always tried to operate with the value of time, my time being at the forefront of pretty much anything I do. I don't know that I would say I'm a financial mind necessarily, but I definitely I do think in terms of numbers more regularly than not. And my time has always, time is always our enemy, because you can't make more of it, right? You get 24 hours a day and you use it however you want, and you still got to sleep in there as well. So sleep, eat, yeah, you know, basic things, right? So you figure, you weigh it down and you might get 14 hours, 15 hours, but you have to have a job. You have to do all these different things. And yeah, it's tricky. You have to decide, to your point about picking and choosing, you have to prioritize what are the things that you both enjoy and that you get value from, whatever that value is that you, you know, kind of assign to it, whether that be like a hobby or, you know, real dollars. I actually, for me, grinding cards started when I was in college as it was actually a means of making money. It was a great way, buying collections and flipping them for singles back before the term MTG finance even existed. I mean, that was
right.
That was 10 years ago now, but dating myself.
Yeah,
a little bit,
actually,
but
it's about 10 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually probably ground out more sales back then in college than I have in any given year since then. And that's only because I was in college. I had more time to do that type of thing. That became my job outside of, you know, going to class. And anyway, it was a job then. It was something I missed after a few years of not doing it. I enjoyed it so much, and I also love Magic the game itself, right? So I've gotten back into it, and now I find myself ramping myself back up like I was in college, and it's like, oh shoot, did I bite off more than I can chew? But
right,
your point is well made. And the long-term, short-term, you know, churn and burn versus long-term, I almost always will invest into the reserve list, even if it's just a small amount of money per month.
Sure.
I'll take, like last month I took $50. It wasn't, you know, I probably
only a very small percentage of profits from the business, but I took that and I put that right into Reservelist for my personal collection. I call it the Reservelist Rainy Day Box. Threw them in there, picked up a handful of cards that are depressed in price, threw them in there, marked them down for what I bought them at, and I'll probably open those back up in 2 years from now, right? Like, I don't even know that I'll consider selling those for two more years, regardless of what they do in price. So, and that's easy. That's an easy way to make some gains on investing in Magic, as opposed to just the day-to-day, what we do with you know, specking and things like that. So,
absolutely. And you know, it has to be, and again, it has to be tailor fit to you, right? And I think, actually, BioSpark had a really great, one of the insiders here, listener, had a really great comment about, you know, now that we're kind of getting into a more kind of bullish market, we've seen a lot of increases, you know, stuff, you know, the kind of market is ramping up again, especially with the advent of, you know, Modern Horizons and the renewed interest in modern and everything like that, that you really do. I mean, this is a pertinent topic because, you know, even within our discussions here, like, hey, you know what, maybe not every card is going to be lucrative to you, right? If you... You know, I'll just use an example that was just yesterday. You know, we were talking about Kalitas. You know, I was like, hey, you know, I don't know about this. Like, it probably will increase. Maybe it, but it's not like in a time frame that I can literally run out to the post office, like as soon as, you know, these cards come in and I can't like make that transaction, right? I can't make that, you know, immediate transaction. So that's kind of where the, you know, where I was coming from. Like, if you can do that, by all means. I mean, it's already increased. You, depending on where you bought it at, you likely already made some money, and that's fine. If you, you know, end up, it still ends up being a buy list play, then take your few dollars on each copy and call it a win. Whichever route that you decide to go, whether you sell it at, you know, full TCG, you know, market price, and you get like $4 or $5, or you go, you know, a week from now when the buy list starts to adjust, you know, you take your $250 or whatever. I mean, it's still a win. So, you know, that's kind of where, you know, I'm coming from this now, especially, and again, it was a great comment about, you know, things are ramping up again. And, you know, when it was a little bit slower before, when, you know, a card, you know, that we kind of identified, it was kind of not few and far in between, but it was kind of less, you know, hectic and like, it was like every other day. It was fine to kind of do that and be like, oh, okay, I bought like, you know, X amount of a car, I can just wait till it comes in, turn around, and go to the post office, fine. But, you know, especially now when it just kind of feels like all these cards every other day.
Every day.
Increasing.
Every day,
you know, I can only, like, you know, yeah, exactly. I can only round up so many different things. And, like, you know, next week is when I'll be able to just, like, find the time to go do that. And, you know, I don't want to make, like, 10 different trips to the post office and deal with that whole thing. So, I just thought it was a pertinent thing to kind of talk about, especially, you know, where I'm coming from. And just so insiders know, I like to be transparent, just so they kind of know in the back of everyone's mind, just kind of where I'm coming from. If it's like, if I really push this, be like, hey, you know, I really am into this, or I will, you know, take the time to do that, then that's one thing. But that's just kind of like my overall kind of take to this now. And, you know, it's a good thing for like CK Biolus too, because they're pretty aggressive and
really are.
It's actually like pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally respect that. I mean, at the end of the day, our lives are changing every day. Our personal lives change every day.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, you have to adjust to your own capabilities. G-Tutor just mentioned always best to take your profits, stay liquid, and move on. I mean, that's, I feel like if we could just like put that at the top of the Quiet Spec or you know, the QS Discord as like a reminder for everyone, because I think a lot of people tend to get caught up. There's a lot of times I see and hear stories of people asking like, is now the time to sell? And it's like, yeah, did you hit your profit margin? If you did, then yes, sell. I've gotten to the point with all the shipping costs, taxes. I mean, there's so many new costs and rising costs over the last couple of years. I've gotten to the point where I'm happy to get 20% margin at the end of the day. I used to be shooting for 50 to 100, and on the bulk of the cards now, it's like if I can get 20, 30%, I'll take it and I'll run with it, or I might just check the buy list and throw it that route and, you know, pick up the 30% credit and maybe I get to 50% overall because of the store credit. But yeah, you got to keep churning and burning if that's what you're in this for. Otherwise,
MTG Finance might not be for you, because the opposition of that is you're going to start finding yourself stuck with all these cards that, yeah,
exactly. I mean, I still have a couple things left over. I mean, now that I'm literally looking at it right here, I mean, like, deploy the Gatewatch. Here's a stack of them right here. Like, I'll get to that whenever I get to it. Here's a stack of Scargan Hellkite that I'm still going to probably sit on, even though they're at a huge loss at this point. I mean, at this point, I like rather, you know, it's fine to just sell them at like the $5-6 I bought them at. But I mean, it's okay. I mean, you know, I just sent stuff in along with, 40 Serum Visions, you know, Kaya. And I was like, you know what? I may have lost on all of this stuff, but, you know, and I still waited to kind of do my one trip to, you know, send something into the CK buy list. And, you know, this more than made up for all of it. So I'm like, okay with that.
Yeah, that's what you're gonna...
You know, I'm not trying to like, you know, yeah, like I didn't run out immediately and try to like fire sell this and whatever. And that's not for everyone. And I get that. You know, but you should, I feel like this is not talked about on a lot of podcasts, but I mean, you should tailor it to yourself, right? I mean, obviously if you're doing well at your day job, you're not going to get the same amount of value per your hour to do this that you're going to do, whether it's like 20, 25, you're making 30, 40, 50, 100, whatever. I mean, there's a certain point where none of this is going to be lucrative for you, right?
Exactly.
So at that point, you have to like either, you know, fraction it to a point where it's like, okay, if I spend X amount of this, like, then it's fine for me. Or if you just like literally just doing this as a hobby and you just enjoy doing, you know, this, or it pays for your Magic addiction or whatever, you know, it certainly pays for some of the stuff that I want to buy for Magic. So, you know, at that point, it's like, okay, I have this steady, you know, full-time job or part-time job or whatever, and it pays me well enough. You know, what, you know, how do I now tailor this, you know, aspect, this kind of side gig or my business or what have you, to now kind of restructure that to make my time, you know, it has to be worth my time. Because you can't just keep running out and, you know, spending a half hour, an hour at the post. I mean, sometimes I go to the post office, there's literally like a line out the door.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I know. Sometimes.
So it's like, you know, you can't make it running out there 10 times a week.
Huh? Yeah, I started buying stamps in bulk now, and I use PayPal shipping. So I've kind of cut out going to the post office intentionally because of exactly what you're describing. It's there'll be one person working, and there'll be 25 people in line. It's like, wait a second, this doesn't. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Why are there so many people here? But
but again, it's like, you know, and I even, you know, sold off a stack of like Ravenous Trap. I bought it. They were like a quarter, not even. You know, buy list them for 40 cents. I'll take the 15 cents and whatever. If they increase 5,000% next week, I really don't care. You know, like
statement. The fact that you say you don't care, though, a lot of people will get attached to watching that card after they sell and be like, "Oh, why didn't I hold it until it was $1?" Right? And like, no. Don't look at it that way. Just take your profits. You got your double or triple up, even though it was, you know, 15 cents in that case. You could have done the same with buying a stack of Deploy the Gatewatch for $1 and buy listing them for $3, right? Like, and maybe it goes to $5 2 weeks later. And it's like, no, don't regret that. Do not regret it. Take your profits, move on, find your next target. A lot of people tend to regret missing on that extra 10 or 20% as opposed to focusing on the next 50 to 100% on the, you know, on their future spec. So,
right. And I feel like, you know, that's where a lot of, you know, folks even talk about, you know, and, you know, I'm sure they, you know, folks who listen to even outside, you know, other podcasts, other avenues, whatever. I mean, I'm not going into that, but, you know, and I'm sure they've talked to that point, but I mean, you have to go a little bit further than that too, right? Like, oh, you know, just take the province and move on, take the province and move on. That's like basic. You know, you have to then now take that and go a little bit further with it. And, you know, again, you have to tailor, you know, how you kind of conduct your, you know, whatever you want to call it, if you want to call this a side gig, a business or what have you, you know, you have to make, you know, the better decisions and cut down some of the time that you invest into this you know, kind of set a system for yourself. Have to just go beyond the, you know, oh, well, you know, just kind of take the problems, move on, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's like,
there's a QS writer who is phenomenal at this. Obviously it's Sig, and he wrote a wonderful article. It's probably one of my favorite articles any writer's ever put out for MTG Finance. And it was talking about the value of time. And he talks, you know, he breaks it down by, I think, three different ways. It was like,
playing the game, investing in the game. I forget what the third one was. Something about maybe like, I don't remember, but I remember that article and it was very powerful. One of the keys coming out of that article, I remember feeling personally, was I need a niche. I need something that I'm going to focus on, which ended up being EDH. I used to be the person that would go chase the latest modern spec, and then I'd go chase the latest standard spec. And, you know, I might do that once in a great while. I did it with Arclight Phoenix because one of the insiders, when they called it out, I was like, yeah, you know what, that card's a no-brainer. And I did. I bought those. But very, very seldomly will I chase those type of cards unless it's like a no-brainer type of situation. And that was a big change for me. Ever since I've done that, it's probably going on, you know, maybe a little over a year since I really started to shift to EDH only. And ever since I did that, I've been much more comfortable with the way that my MTG Finance approach has gone. You know, I feel like I'm both better at finding the cards and profiting on cards. I have fewer losses, I think, which is that's obviously a big one, but also I'm more on top of it. I'm more on top of cards as they spike. You know, I'm not missing those spikes. I'm selling into them. I've set my price. I know what I want to get for a card. And, you know, going back to that thing, like, I don't care if it keeps going. If I sell into the spike and I get my double up or whatever, great, awesome, and I move on. So,
yeah, and I mean, that was a good point that you had too there about, you know, kind of recognizing cards and kind of trying and following the trends better. I mean, it's also gotten to a point where it's like, you know, well, and for me too, I mean, I'm not like right 100% of the time. No one is, but they tell you otherwise. And I'm okay with being wrong. I didn't even agree with the, you know, buying into Arclight Phoenix. I did, but, you know, it's like, you know what? I respect, you know, this position, you know, whatever. I'll throw some money at it. I'll buy X amount of copies. And if I hit it, great. If not, whatever. But I respect, you know, the kind of thought process, you know, bringing that forward. And, you know, while I not agree, I was very outspoken of not agreeing and not evaluating it correctly. But, you know, I felt that whomever is putting it forth enough to say, you know what, more often than not, like, it's going to work out. So I'll take the chance that it doesn't. Yeah. But on top of that, it's even like, so, you know, it's like these certain cards, it's like, well, you know, that just like, it may spike, you may sell it, but I just kind of feel like it's very artificial and I'm just going to be stuck with like these niche cards that like no one's going to want, like some foil, whatever. And that I can't even, I know sunrise. I'm just going to not even buy a list. What?
Foil Second Sunrise. I wrote about that one for Tessa and that was a huge miss. I'll just leave it at that.
It's like, you know what? It's like, you know,
six or eight of those. And it's like,
I just know that's not like a liquid card that I can buy a list because of X reasons. Right. So it's just, again, it's just about, you know, setting a system for yourself. And then you're right. Like you'll just get better at, and you may miss on a card because it doesn't tailor itself well to you and how you kind of set yourself up to kind of do this and as time efficiently as you can. And that's okay.
Yeah, no, definitely. Totally agreed.
Yeah. I just thought that was a really good topic. I didn't want to kind of like drag that on, but I you're right. Like even Bio said, I think it was even more pertinent because of things are going to probably start ramping up here very quickly.
Yeah.
With all this stuff.
Great.
So.
It's a great call out, a great point. And I mean, you can see it on interest. I've been kind of trying to track this over the last like.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Kozilek and then like, you know, like all this other stuff and Kalidas and, you know, random, you know, sideboard cards.
And, and then like a random modern condition foil is on there. It's like,
it's like just so much stuff.
But the amount of
random buyouts, whether they're, you know, they seem artificial or not, I mean, they're out there. So it can be overwhelming. And you go in on cards that are tailor made to, you know, your system and you pass on the one, right? You know, even the same thing with Serum Vision. I immediately said from the start, I was like, you know what? I don't think we should really be buying cards, you know, based on something, you know, a test that they're going to do one time and it never ends up being something. But at the same time, I'm like, but. You know, this particular card, like even when you call, you know, Serum Powder, they're like a quarter, they're like 50 cents. So if you do want to buy it and just say like, what the hell, you know, they're pretty inexpensive enough to go ahead and do, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I was even against, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm not really going to be going in, you know, super hard on cards like this, just for like on the off chance, some of them, you know, and it's like a rule that may not ever be a thing, but. You know, this is pretty much as close to a penny stock as we can get, so why not? worked out. It may have not, but I was like, okay with, you know, tailoring that to me. And then here I was buy listing them literally like 2 days ago, like, and I bought them 3 weeks ago,
right.
You know, and they weren't like, they were still the 50 cents that I bought them at until like, you know, a few days ago, a week ago. So,
And last week on Cast, I mentioned a bulk pick card, which was Diligent Farmhand. And you could get those off of Card Kingdom at the time for like 35 cents near mint or something like that. And now they're buy listing for just shy of a dollar in store credit. And so I actually bought 20 of them myself because I saw that discrepancy. They had like 70 or something in stock at the time. I'm going to turn that around and buy list. I actually sold a handful of them at $3.99. So they've already paid for themselves and I'll take the rest. I'm just going to buy list them, get them off and move on. Right. But,
yeah. Okay. So, actually another, we're going to kind of switch gears here very quickly to, you know, what I saw. It actually started off topic, but sparked, you know, it does spark really good conversation. You know, the conversations, again, I mean, it's an understatement that we have on a daily amongst all the insiders, just incredible. But, you know, you and I actually have come to like a common ground on this as well about MTG Arena and kind of the role, you know, the positive role it has even just on the IP and what that can mean. You know, it may seem like a huge thing that doesn't really involve us, but it does in a way kind of... subtly and kind of not so obviously does affect the market. And they just had, you know, a really kind of big update, which is great. And, you know, I'm just kind of looking back and, you know, I think it was G Tutor or someone that even said, may have been, you know, Mike or someone, I can't remember exactly who, but I actually agreed where I feel like they should be pumping more into advertising this game and really pushing it to the forefront because I think we talked like maybe 2 weeks ago. I mean, this game's really coming along.
Oh my God. Yeah, totally.
It's not like, it's kind of like a perfect storm for MTG Arena to go like literally and snatch like kind of the top space of digital card games because Hearthstone has just been, and this is, you know, I don't know if really everyone has been, this is very quickly history lesson on, you know, Blizzard and what they've been going through. They've been going through like all these kind of changes. The kind of overall, I guess, confidence level is kind of low there. So it's like that is, you know, then turning around and affecting Hearthstone in its own ways. I mean, and just Hearthstone in general has not been, you know, kind of the juggernaut that it has been in the couple years past.
It's definitely shown
MTG can and really just go in there and I think can just usurp Hearthstone easily.
I totally agree.
That have sounded crazy like 2 years ago. And I understand that, but like right now in time, they can easily dethrone Hearthstone. Not like it could happen. It could definitely happen if they continue to kind of seize this opportunity in Hearthstone kind of floundering and MTG Arena kind of gaining the momentum that it's gaining. And it is still in beta. And we talked about kind of their, you know, newer updates that are, you know, new user friendly. They're kind of adding all these microtransaction things like that's just kind of goes with the territory of, you know, gaming these days. But that's a different story for another day. But I a lot of the changes overall, especially in the Magic community, are fairly positive. So when's the last time that anything was ever kind of viewed as positive?
That just kind of goes without saying.
But I'm now from before when it like kind of just first dropped, there was a lot of like, what the hell's going on? You know, they need to change this and they change that. They are certainly listening. And the kind of negativity is definitely down and the positivity on it has definitely been increasing. Whereas before it was like a lot of like, I don't know about this. This is like kind of suck. Like, I don't know what they're doing kind of thing. And that slowly started to turn into more positivity as they continue to listen to the community and make these changes.
I think I said this last week or 2 weeks ago when we talked about Arena. I am blown away at how far they came in basically two short years, right? Like they went from seemingly hopeless with the online community to a platform that is just thriving. One of the insiders just mentioned, Time Bean just said, still in beta. It's hard to kind of believe that it's still in beta. I mean, I know that there's bugs. I get it. There's various issues, and they're always going to be there because
the number of permutations that they have to test in the development world is, you know, otherworldly with how many magic interactions there are. They'll never catch everything. But that being said, when you look at the platform and you look at its visual appeal and you consider like the UI and what they've built in such a short amount of time, and then you hear the numbers on their, they even mentioned it, they called it out on their quarterly earnings on top of that, Hasbro did. So, I mean, it is, it's a real thing. And, you know, to your point about like marketing it, and I think they could go in with the brand name that Magic has as a whole, right? And the backing of Hasbro, like the sky is the limit with this thing. It's got the potential to be, in my opinion, the type of thing that rivals something like online poker, right? Online poker is huge. And Magic the Gathering, poker players and Magic the Gathering, while certainly very different in a lot of regards, have a lot of similarities in terms of that competitive aspect. There's a lot of, you know, the statistics, you think about the probability that goes into Magic, the skill that goes into it, the bluffing, all that type of stuff, being able to read your opponents. Online poker has already captured that market. Certainly gambling is part of that, so ignore that piece. We're not going to talk about that. But the arena world has just limitless amounts of potential to capture a whole new audience that I don't think paper probably ever could capture. You know, there are a lot of people who don't want to play paper that are, I have a very close friend of mine who he doesn't want to be out in social environments. You know, he'll play Magic with me. We grew up playing Magic together. But Arena is wonderful for him because he can play Magic with anybody any day without having to have anxiety of playing with them in person. And that's a huge thing. So
yeah, it really is. And you know, and just on top of that, I mean, they've really turned this into like a spectator thing, right?
Yes. Yep. Esports.
You know, it's fine to use that umbrella for sure, but it really does make sense because, you know, before, you know, and they have these pro tour thing like that, like that's fine. I mean, how hard is it for someone to even just kind of, even a seasoned, very seasoned player, some of us here, like even myself, like watching some of these things, like what the hell is, no, I'm boring. No one wants to like get on that. Not that paper's going away, but you know, it kind of, everything kind of drives itself, right? Like Arena kind of captures the folks that want to just see like interesting visual things, gets them into the paper thing. Oh, okay. Like EDH or whatever's maybe, you know, I don't get into like modern, whatever, but I can, you know, stick with this kind of paper EDH stuff and then like back into Arena. So everything just kind of like is working, you know, itself in kind of this, you know, cog. And, you know, it's just, I wanted to quickly talk about, you know, that because they had a really big update on that. I know a lot of folks, especially in the Discord, love, you know, have played Magic Arena. They do so often. But it's definitely a factor, may not be the entire driving factor, but along with, you know, everything else that they're doing, this is definitely a factor to just keep getting more people, which in turn, you know, creates this, you know, thriving market. I mean, I think we're really, it's been okay before, but I really do feel like it's going to be a pretty big year for them.
I agree. I totally agree, actually. I mean, and I think that the conversion, the interesting thing for me is going to be how they convert players from Arena to paper, right? Because one thing that MTGO does very well is it converts paper to online and vice versa because of redemption. And Arena doesn't have that yet. So if someday they were to add that in, you know, as a perk, or even if it wasn't like full redemption for an entire collection, but they added some way to get paper cards out of playing Arena.
Yeah.
I think that
or
is
you, going to be, or you literally just get digital goods from buying paper. I mean, that could
exactly. Be- yes, exactly. Invert. Exactly. Right. If you buy a pack, you get whatever you got in that pack.
They are starting to do that already. I know at least for the Planeswalker specific stuff, like it's not like earth shattering or groundbreaking, but it's a pretty good start when you have like those Planeswalker pack. I mean, you redeem them, you get the whole Planeswalker thing.
Yeah, right. So, I remember they did that.
I mean,
that.
That's just like a foot in the door, but they can certainly expand on that.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, shoot, if you imagine a world where you could charge 50 cents more a pack because you're going to get a redemption code for all the cards in that pack.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's, and that's a win-win for everybody, really, if something like that happens. So,
yeah. Yeah. Great stuff all around. I would try to start typing in your questions now. We'll try to get in a couple at the end here. But I did want to talk about, some cards that we were considering for this week. A lot of action
And so much action. It's so hard to keep
track. Yeah, it really is. So, I mean, we'll start with you, Chris. I don't know if like you've been kind of following this stuff as intently, but there's even a couple of cards that I feel like we've talked about. They're certainly on the radar, but haven't quite like really started making a, you know, big leap forward yet. So I wanted to point those out as well. So those might not be like specifically, you know, my card to consider for this week, but I also did want to point those out too. So I'm just kind of like compiling that.
Yeah, I have a couple. Just a couple quick comments. So I think it was yesterday we had a little run in the Insider Discord about a couple of masterpieces. I threw out Chromatic Lantern and Lightning Greaves, a couple of cards that are practically ubiquitous in EDH world at this point. I would not be surprised to see those rise pretty significantly over the next few months here. Actually, BioSpark mentioned a third card. This one is one I was going to also call out. Planar Bridge is another one that's already seen movement. The pack non-foil and foils have already moved. I actually just sold a foil.
I'll cross that one off.
Yeah, you had that one.
I was writing them down just for the ones that, you know, we discussed, you know, just to kind of reiterate that for anyone that it kind of just maybe got lost in the shuffle. But go ahead.
Yeah. So Lantern and Greaves are ones we already talked about. I'm not going to spend any time in here on those, but I like those quite a bit. A couple of cards that I also have on my radar right now, I've got three. And one of them, I'll start with this one, Guardian Project. I hesitate to ever recommend a standard relevant card. I say relevant. It's actually probably not relevant in standard at all, but it's a standard in print card in the most current set with Ravnica Allegiance. It is among one of the best EDH cards. I've seen it popping up in my pod regularly. It is just a phenomenal card in terms of draw power for green. And I've seen the foils starting to kind of dissipate on TCG Player. There's I think three. Let me double check. I want to say there was three pages left when I checked it today. That is non-foil. There are not 13 pages. Four pages. There's four pages of foils, but the ramp for it is starting to increase pretty substantially. I actually got in on it. I got four copies of it when it first came out for like $3 a piece, and I have mine listed for $5.99. I'm actually considering upping that and just like holding for a little longer because I think this card is likely going to outpace the supply over time. It's second in EDH play behind Smothering Tith, I think, out of Ravnica Allegiance. So it's already got a lot of momentum, and it's just a great card. It's a great card to keep an eye on, add it to your watch list, or, you know, if keep an eye on it. And I think the non-foils themselves are not super unattractive either. They're sub $1, I think. And anyway, yeah, so that's the first one. The second one is Mana Confluence from the Zendikar Expeditions. It's kind of in the same light. The reason I'm suggesting it is similar to the reasons why I would have suggested Lantern and Greaves, Lightning Greaves. It's a card that I think sees somewhere between 20 and 30,000 on EDH Rec. It's only going to get better over time because, you know, anytime a three color plus commander is printed, it finds itself into that 99 usually. And there's four pages of it on TCG Player currently, but you'll notice that there's quite a bit of lightly played on there. Like the near mint is, you've got a bunch of sellers on the first page that are near mint. There's like six of them. The others are all lightly played. But if you start digging into the pages 2 and 3, there's actually more lightly played than there are near mint. And it ramps all the way back up to $100 by the end of page 3. So if you can find copies of that sub 70, they're 65 on TCG Player right now. I could see this going back to 100 in the next few months here, especially with tax season and just the general movement that we're seeing. It's a card that I personally just, I really like. So I picked up, just in full disclosure, I did this earlier today. I picked up three copies myself. I think $64 was my average price. So, and then the last card is from Commander 2017. I was just messaging one of the insiders in General Finance about it. They actually called it out. Raravan called it out at the same time. It was on my list as one of the three cards I wanted to call out here. It's Ramos Dragon Engine. It's a card that it's super unique, first of all.
It's a great, great dragon, like casual card that inherently props its price up a little bit. It's also got the only the single print from Commander 2017, which, you know, obviously helps it quite a bit. And the reason I really like it specifically is the stock on it is very low for near mint. There's only three pages total on TCG Player, but if you filter by near mint, there's like nine sellers or something like that going into today. I'll give a quick tip to anyone that is interested in specking on this card. Go to Card Kingdom because they have near mint at $12.99, which I think is right around TCG low. That's actually where I got my copies this morning. And $12.99, I want to say it might have even been lower than TCG low. So anyway, worth calling that out if you're interested in that card.
Yeah, I do think. Let me ask this is just an offhanded, you know, question about Commander 2017. You know, I kind of like making sure I always plug 2018 because like no one's even talking about that. But I'm seeing a lot of 2017 stuff like prop up. One that I kind of even wrote down here that I was actually kind of looking at for this week even was Traverse the Outlands. Like, so I'm like kind of starting to see a lot of that stuff starting to increase now that we're like a few years removed from it. I guess the question is, like, why are some of the, I mean, we've seen like big increases on, you know, Kindred Discovery, Hammer of Nazan, Kindred Dominance, you know, all that stuff. But why are, you know, especially Ramos too, like, why did so many of those commanders decrease such, you know, so substantially? I mean, at one point, like, everyone was building around Marcel the Pretender, and that one, like, is, like, less than a dollar at this
Why I think is because, I mean, well, I'll take a stab at that. For most of those cards, I don't actually know that I would put Ramos into that category, mainly because you can build around it as a commander. You can also build around it as, sure. I'm sorry, just throw it in your 99. I think it's great in either context. Some of those other commanders, they're not really good outside of being a commander. And even then, they're more just like kind of casual commanders.
Right.
They might be fun to play around, certainly, but I think you see with those type of commanders, Marisol, for example, they rotate in and out. They being players, EDH sure. players, they'll build the deck, okay. they'll run it for, I don't know, call it 3 to 6 months. They enjoy it, they have fun with it, and then they take it apart, and then they move on to their next commander. That's why I think you see like Ramos, which will hold these. If you look at the Ramos graph, it's continued to just go up, right? And the reason for that is because if you went out and you bought a Commander 2017, the Draconic, whatever it was named, and you got your copy, you might have actually built around Ramos as a commander to start with. But then you might actually, you could be like me. I love dragons. I have a soft spot in my heart because I started playing in an Invasion. You might just plug that card into another dragon related deck somewhere else, whether it be a Scion deck or an Ur-Dragon deck. It's also because it's five color, it's actually pretty fun to play in some of the other, like Super Friends, for example. It's great in Super Friends. So anyway, I think that's the difference, is the narrowness of some of those commanders just being that they can only really be used effectively as commanders. They're not really fun to play as part of the 99, so to speak. That's my guess.
All right. Yeah, I just figured I asked because, you know, they did... There was like kind of all this hype around them, and then they just kind of like fell off the radar. I mean, I get that, you know, there's everything kind of falls out of favor. But yeah, I mean, now Traverse kind of stood out for me, not just because it's a green card. So let's just get that out of the way. It's just like you were kind of looking at, I mean, there's only really a handful of them under $10. And then we're starting to look at like 15 plus.
Right. The ramp is super. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, is this more of a, you know, a 15 plus card, or do you think it could just keep trending at this point? Because I'm seeing it pop up a couple times.
I think the difference. So one reason there's only a handful of copies to your point under $10, and it does ramp. I mean, there's only two pages on TCG Player actually. So the challenge I have with a card like this is first of all, it's pretty easy to reprint. So you figure,
yeah, and there's like a ton of ramp options.
That's it. Right. That was going to be my second point. There's a lot of ramp options out there. So this particular card only really fits in. Like, this is a great card for a Dinos deck. I run a Dinos deck. I actually don't have this card in there mainly because of its price being so high. But if it ever got reprinted and I could get it for $4 or $5, I probably would. Because it'd be fantastic in that type of a deck. It's a little more narrow compared to just some of your standard, like Kodama's Reach, for example. So anyway, yeah, I think that's the main reason. But at the same time, supply is tiny on these things, right? Like, that's what we're starting to see. And you keep mentioning Commander 2018. It surprises me how far all of those have fallen compared to even just 2017. Because there are some good cards in Commander 2018, but even the best card is like $6, you know? And so anyway.
Right. Yeah. So where I was going with that next is, you know, and it actually kind of sparked the, you know, from like where Kozilek, you know, we were talking about Kozilek and Kalitas. It kind of seems like we keep going back to like those, it seems like it's now okay to start, you know, really looking back at the Zendikar sets, even though they were kind of open to Oblivion, really kind of looking at those cards and seeing some really good opportunities, because we've already shown that a handful of cards from those sets can increase, and they did. In that respect, it doesn't have, and even on EDH Rec, it's not like, you know, that's not like the only metric I look at, but it is a fairly niche, but a card that really can't be reprinted all too often because it's like kind of very specific. I liked the discussion that we had about it in the Insider Discord, so I'm going to kind of really talk about it here is Mirror Pool. It's not a ton, like in ton of decks, but I kind of feel like it's starting to like inadvertently get some hype because of like all the Eldrazi Titans going, you know, starting to increase. Kozilek was kind of the cheapest. It's increased. I think honestly, Emrakul could probably, the 2.0 can actually just keep increasing from where it is now. I've seen it pop up a few times over the past week or so. I don't know if that's like just kind of spillover from Kozilek, but I really do like Mirror Pool. And, you know, the foils are really interesting too, because like the non-foils are probably like $354, but the foils are like $8. So I kind of like foils of this. And again, it's a card that, you know, is very specific to that colorless matters stuff. It's not, you know, very easy to kind of reprint, but you know,
that would definitely be a
land. It's a mythic, so that makes me feel a little bit better about it, especially in those sets. And it's like a very interesting and like kind of unique card.
The colorless point, the reprint point is definitely worth mentioning too. I don't know that it, you know, because it's kind of got a couple of different texts on there, I don't know where they would want to plug that in necessarily. It sees on EDH Rec, it's at 6,200 already, which is higher than I actually would have guessed. So, I mean, it's got kind of some decent backing by those numbers as well.
Yeah, there's also a card that seems to be trending over the course of all its printings. And it's like this card dipped after a reprint, but it's like pretty steady at like $20. It reprinted down to all I'm talking about Containment Priest. The UMA like really sent it kind of nosediving because it's now second reprinting. Only, I think it has a Amonkhet invocation printing, which might actually be kind of lucrative itself. But I don't think this card is going to stay like $4 forever. It had a really strong price memory. It actually, and the graph is kind of like where I'd like to see it. It's starting to kind of really dip up over the last like month or so. So I think this is honestly just for play. And the only hesitation that I have is they could easily throw this into like a Modern Horizons, which would totally obliterate its price, but it would get printed into Modern. So, you know.
If it's anything like Absorb, I mean, it could actually reinvigorate it by getting a reprint into Modern potentially.
Right.
You know,
because I don't know, like a UMA, a Commander 2014. I mean, yeah, maybe a Modern Horizons, but I mean, I just, even if it was like reprinted, and even right now, at its like current price, $5 goes down to like $2. I just don't think this is the kind of card that can stay like below $8 to $10 for that long.
If it got printed, I think it's already seen a little bit. I could be wrong, but I think it saw a little bit of a run on the masterpiece, not like a significant one, but I think it's ticked up slightly on speculation that it could show up in modern, right? And then, you know, people want to foil out their decks and they go for the most updated version.
Yeah, that's
version.
An interesting one to kind of keep an eye on too.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I haven't actually looked at that
UMA
one.
And UMA foils, actually. And then it would have a modern Horizon.
Yeah, right, because the UMA foil is the only pack foil version.
You know, I'm just kind of pointing it out. And then we had Kalitas, Void Winnower, which I actually really like. Void Winnower. I think this card's still at like $6. Want to double check that. It's definitely trending. The market's at $7, but there's a lot of printing or a lot of listings at like the $6, $6.50 range. This is not like a colorless only thing. From what my understanding, this is actually just a really good card. And you know, a lot of folks have been incorporating this card in EDH for quite some time.
This one came up in.
Yeah, I like foils, yeah. But honestly, I really like non-foils too.
Yeah, yeah. I actually, it's funny because I have a stack of these.
Discord sold me on this.
Yeah, I had a stack of these that I bought after rotation, and I, to our point earlier about time, they were in, like, I have like a stack of foil Eldrazi that I bought at rotation. I bought a bunch of them. I basically bought like two play sets of everyone that I deemed playable, and I had basically completely forgotten that I had done that. When this one came up in the Discord a day or whatever, a couple days ago, I went back and I looked at it, and sure enough, I actually have 8 copies. A couple of them are actually in like a Legacy Eldrazi deck that I've had in a safe forever. I've never even gotten to play it, but I think I'm gonna have to pull those out and flip them, because I look back at my records and I bought these like 3 years ago or something like that for $3 at rotation, which is kind of remarkable. I had no idea it had ticked up this much already. But yeah, you're right. I mean, the graph looks great on it, and it's gotten the hype from Command Zone. That's what drove it, or you know, what's really been driving it recently. There was the Kozilek deck that won the Command Zone or the game nights, I should say, on Command Zone, and then they did a deck tech about it. So anyway, this one is I don't disagree. I really like it. It fits into a lot of different EDH decks too, being that it's colorless. You can treat it just like an artifact, essentially. So
yeah. And then the one I kind of felt really, I'm trying to wrap this up. Sorry, I don't want to have this go too, apologies, but the one I feel most confident about this week, and it actually, I got spurred about it because, you know, I was going back and like looking at all the Zendikar stuff because like talking about it, but one that I really do like is Foil Green Warden of Murasa. I feel like, foils are very good. You know, they pretty much can't get any lower. They're $4. And you know, from what I'm told, that 10,000 like plus deck, I mean, I don't really use like only EDH rec as my kind of metric here, but you know, it is mythic. It's highly played in the format. Foils are basic. The multiplier on the foils is basically non-existent. I just love the card. I mean, it's like one of those literally evergreen, pun intended, cards for EDH. And it's, I think it's a very good place to play.
I remember when it was printed.
Even in Zendikar.
Oh, sure. No, I remember when it was printed. I actually have one single foil copy of this, you know, Gitrog Monster deck. It's the first EDH deck I ever built, actually. And ever built from scratch. And I put this card in it. And I remember when it was printed, people were talking about it being the second coming of Eternal Witness. I don't know if I would give it that level of kudos, but it's a darn good card. I will say that. The fact that you can get things back from your graveyard twice, you know, and it's got a body on it. It's a very potent EDH card for sure.
Yep. So that's going to do it for me. I like foils. I mean, even non-foils, I feel like could start trending over time. Mirror Pool, just because it's like really unique, and I wanted to kind of stay on point here. Void Winnower, non-foils. I don't know. I mean, it feels like foils, the ship could probably keep sailing on that.
There's not a lot of supply out there currently.
Yeah, there's not a lot. I mean, I think they're in that, what, like $15 range?
Yeah, they are. I mean, I think the target on that is you're if you're not getting out already, you're probably targeting for $20, right? I mean,
I absolutely love Seasons Past. I absolutely love that card. That would definitely make the list. I love that card. But, you know, I may have a little bit of a bias, but that's, I mean, it's just a fantastic card to probably stash away for, you know, for
It's funny, I've never actually seen Seasons Pass played, and I've never played it, but I always hear that it's a great card, and I feel like I need to just like get a single copy of it just to play it myself, because I feel like it, maybe it's an unknown awesomeness.
Yeah, but anyway, yeah, keep an eye on Containment Priest, see where that ends up. It could be very lucrative. Void Winnower, Mirror Pool, Green Warden, Murasa.
And then for me, recapping, it's Guardian Project. Put that on your watch list. It is in standard and in the latest printed set, so keep that in mind. But I do think that's going to be just a EDH card to run with for a long, long time. Mana Confluence in the Expedition form. I really like that one. I would target roughly 100. It gets back to $100 in the next 3 to 6 months, and you could probably get them for 65-ish now. And then Ramus Dragon Engine. Again, you can get those on CK. You can get those on CK at $12.99 near mint, which is, I think, right around TCG low. And there's not very many near mint copies left. That's just going to
be worth, folks. This will get probably condensed down a little bit, so that's good. But yeah, appreciate everyone joining us this week. Awesome questions, awesome comments. We will see you all next week. Chris, you have a good one, all right?
Hey, you too, Chaz. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
take
everybody.
Take care, everyone.